Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. We are always here until the hour of 6, your drive time show, your favorite duo. That is very good at keeping you company with a bunch of geopolitical statistics, geoeconomics, your information, basically your everything. We do focus on local every now and then, or sometimes we just go general, as in today is somewhat slightly general. And today we're talking about one of my favorite subjects, basically, in terms of, especially in local, in local discussion terms, and that is agriculture. But this is not agriculture, basically, in any specific way. This is agriculture and the need for information, in terms of data gathering. Actually, yeah, that's one specific way in terms of data gathering. And why, data gathering, more like information, is very important. Now, I don't think anyone needs to be, needs to be told, basically, how important information is. One of the reasons why I like action movies is because they use a lot of military... Pardon me, I'm about to break my stuff here, not the studio stuff. Just dropping stuff left, right, and center. One of the reasons why I like, and I think it's safe to say why everyone, why a lot of people that do like action movies, especially military movies, is because, it's because of the lingo that they use. You know, they start using words like, we need to go on a recon mission. Dwight?
The Helmut?
So, importance of, data or information gathering and, basically data in agriculture. So I'm starting off from the importance of, first of all, how's the event?
Which event? This one where we had the two scientists from Spain talking. No, the other event that I just came from right now.
The one that you just came from.
Yeah, it was cool and nice, got hugs. Heard some nice jokes that the generation ahead of me, the boomers, love to make. It's nice, it's awesome stuff.
It's my favorite part of the, of the two Spanish, the Spanish agriculture data discussion.
Yeah.
Was you going, just say it, say it. Homeboy was trying to beat around. What's wrong with you guys?
I love giving people the unfiltered, content that I sometimes record here for our radio stations and for my colleagues.
Just say it. But, oh boy, okay, fine, Nguni.
Because I wanted him to say it. Because primarily...
You wanted to be politically correct?
No, not politically correct. Because here's the thing, academics have a brutality about them. Mm-hmm. The brutality is that they tell you the facts.
Yeah.
They are not political. They don't go beat about the bush. Yeah. They don't
They're
go,
not sweet-talking you.
They don't sweet-talk you. They are worse than doctors.
Doctors are the best Swiss sugar coating guys. Yeah.
Doctors and IT guys, they were trained that way. They literally probably have a class somewhere that says, whatever you do, do not say it is the end.
Sound throw pilots in that bucket.
Yeah, no, but the pilots have to work on their thing, situation.
And also they have to fix their microphones.
That too. Mm. Plus they probably have to fix their personalities. But the first two that I mentioned, medical. Medical doctors and IT guys.
You're flying out of the country.
No, because the person at least knows that, when they get on, when they step onto that airplane, it's the only safety mechanism that exists is if that plane is moving forward, not moving downwards.
Mm-mm, no, that's bad.
Or upwards.
Not in any uncontrolled way.
Yeah.
That's bad, yeah.
It needs to move forward in its controlled manner with its controllable capacities.
Yeah.
Meaning the engines it has, and that's it. And then it has to land, and it has to
take off
with those same similar controlled capacities.
Yeah, you're in charge, so everything is good.
When it comes to IT guys and doctors, medical doctors, they have to explain to you everything possible in the scenario that does not immediately send you into a nervous breakdown, coupled up with a whole bunch of personality splitting disorders, plus associated to the potential disaster that they are sharing with you. in terms of severity of said disaster. So the other discussion we had about disaster risk management, I think we still have to have that discussion.
Disaster risk management. That's the one that also came straight to how to sort of like forecast all these things before they take place.
Basically, The downside of the disaster risk management guys is they have to deal with something that's uncontrollable.
Yeah. Mother Nature.
These two guys are dealing with things that are within the control, meaning your health is within your control, many cases.
Yeah.
In other cases, it's if it's hereditary, there's nothing you can do because you obviously inherited it from a parent.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to IT stuff, just like cybersecurity, well, there's only one weakness in that whole information value chain.
Which is?
The human.
Yep.
When you accidentally open up a file that says, do not open me, and you go and click open.
Reverse psychology. Works all the time.
You know, just because someone says, I'd like to see what happens, you know. Yeah, go ahead. Do the experiment. Let's see what happens on your PC.
You know, every time I look at these things from reverse psychology, I can't help but think that, in the Garden of Eden, if God just said, leave all these trees, eat that one in the middle. I'm sure they would have avoided that one and ate everything. And as Christianity would have it, would be in paradise by now.
Yeah, but we know there's
I'm told in that paradise there's no getting laid.
There's a gender that doomed the whole of humanity outside of
decided
that.
To be an explorer.
Decided to be adventurous with cuisine.
Francina will walk in here and start a fight. Now,
no, I'm glad she's not listening to us. She's doing other production work, so
yeah. Yeah, so back to information gathering and its significance in terms of more like expanding agriculture potential.
Yeah.
The first place that took me to was basically the importance of information in general. And that is in everything that we do, data gathering is needed. And we see this even in movies that we watch. For those of us that like watching war movies, before a military operation, for example, the first operation is more often what they call recon, where they are basically studying, enemy territory, enemy strengths and weaknesses. Well, how many are they? Like, obviously, we are dealing with approximate numbers here, most likely. How many are they? What types of weapons they have? What should we prepare for before you can't just storm in blind. As in terms of, the same though then can be said of everything else, which includes today's topic, which is agriculture.
Yeah.
Agriculture is a very broad term, and you don't have to be an agriculture expert to basically figure that out. It's a very broad term. If you say you are practicing agriculture, it's fair for one to ask you that, what are you farming with? Animals or crops? And even if you say I'm farming with crops, you still have to narrow it down. Which crops are you farming? Like, are you doing which vegetable farming, or are you doing horticulture, or you like, I'm doing horticulture is the one for fruits, right?
Yeah. Horticulture is, and I don't know why some people.
I thought it was a culture that's hot, but that's just my high school thinking.
No, there would have been an R in that hot. It would have gone hort. the downside of sometimes explaining horticulture, Helmut, is that, I've had a couple of people debate with me about it, and I told them, please go and, consult the various particular knowledge, banks out there, which are easily to find on the internet. And I've had to crisscross that particular explanation of the word horticulture. Horticulture is a subculture within agriculture.
Yeah.
But horticulture literally speaks to backyard gardening.
Really?
That discussion we had also about, how to try and increase production of your own food production, but you're doing this in the back of your garden.
Yeah.
As well as also the one time we had the discussion with Mr. Josiah also here last year on air about backyard gardening 101. And for some reason, when you go talk to other people out there in the broader Namibian public, they always love debating on the meaning of that word. And I have to always tell them, guys, it's a sub practice of the overall agricultural practice, just like animal husbandry or animal rearing is a subculture of, is a sub thing of livestock farming.
It's a practice under agriculture. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, like if you look at it, if you decided to more like structure it in a form of a tech, like you do FML3, for example.
Yeah.
And you wrote agriculture at the top. You have an A4 page, and then you write agriculture at the top, and then you now start splitting it. Like, what are the two main divisions? You'd go take, for example, you're either farming with crops or animals. Yeah, and then you realize that under those two subdivisions, which are crops and animals, you can farm with all kinds of crops, and you can farm with all kinds of animals.
Yeah,
and also and then when,
as long as they're not wild animals.
Yeah, let's say domestic.
Then you're just a game farm.
You can bet our
or a glorified lodge.
That's a glorified lodge. You are not farming. You know, yeah, come on, let's face it.
Because they are just walking.
That's not farming. Yeah, that's just. The same way that, you know, I'm a sniper in Call of Duty and you are, you are a model on Instagram. Well, now.
Helmut.
Okay. Now, the thing is, even if you, take under, animal, the subdivision of animal.
Yeah.
And then you go with, okay, now you're farming with, with animals. Which animal? And then you say, okay, I'm farming with cattle. What breed? Because what do you farm them for?
Yeah.
Do you farm them for milk or for beef? So now at the end of the day, you are going to end up with a very wide structure detailing a lot of information, all of which fall under agriculture. Now, so having the discussion of how to gather data and gathering and processing in a way that it's important, especially in terms of agricultural practice. It really explains why it's a very complicated subject, because you are talking about something that's very general. So it's hard to specify. And by the way, it was only today when I learned that there's a type of grass called, is it C4 as in kaboom C4?
No. It was spelled so. Oh no. Mm. Oh no, Helmut.
What?
What these two scientists were referring to.
Uh-huh.
And I also sat there going like, huh? What C4 are you seeing?
Because when I had C4, I'm thinking.
And they are just C4ing the whole presentation. Uh-huh. Okay, so what happened? It's a specific kind of grass that is native or indigenous to this part of Southern Africa, to Namibia.
Yeah.
And it's a grass that they were talking about how to replicate. Take this grass.
Yeah.
And try and replicate it as
more like artificially farm with it?
No, not artificially farm even, because it's more like helping, if you're a livestock farmer, it's more like helping the livestock farmer have persistent grazing for his or her livestock.
Yeah.
But the downside of this grass was Sarabia, the male scientist, Sarabia, or let's call him just Carlos. Carlos explained that if you tried to beat, drought conditions, or yeah, let's call them dry conditions, when you're between, let's say you're a livestock farmer and you are between rainy seasons. So now you've got a dry period in that part, and you're trying to ensure that your cattle have as much, or your livestock as much access to a specific, let's call it like an edible plant out there in when they're grazing. And he spoke about this particular plant. Now, he called it C4 because it's a specific strand of a specific,
like species.
Plant. Yeah, plant species. Yeah. It's a specific strand, meaning there are multiple ones. Mm. The downside that he explained of this particular plant, which is something that Namibians find everywhere for those of...
We have a lot of it.
We have it already. The downside of this plant is that if it becomes dry, this plant increases its silicon production. Now, I thought silicon was a artificial compound that was developed in a lab, which you find in cosmetic surgery.
Mm-hmm.
You and I would know of which part of cosmetic surgery silicon is usually used in.
Yep. My favorite.
The downside is he explained that this plant, if conditions get drier and you now multiply this plant's, presence, let's say on your.
Sorry, I'm still thinking about silicon.
I know. Oh my goodness. Why did you make those hand gestures up? So let's say you go and literally plant this particular grass species Everywhere on your farm or everywhere on the piece of grazing land or pasture land that your livestock have access to. The downside is, let's say that period that you don't get rainfall. Now the plant realizes, okay, let's go into defense mode and I start increasing silicon, the silicon content in the plant. Now the thing is, what Sarabia, most of his particular presentation was about, talking to the digestive system of your livestock.
So the ability of the animal to digest the specific plant.
Yes. And just to factor in for the listeners on this particular discussion. Now, even though the presentation was based upon data and livestock farming on how to improve livestock farming with data, let's call it during, let's also look at the subset. Well, the overarching presentation was based upon drought conditions or dry conditions. For example, like in Namibia, the fascinating thing that Sarabia and De La Puerta quickly veered off into was how to produce or prepare your livestock or animal farmers to have drought resistant livestock. Now, anyone would think, oh wow, what kind of a science experiment am I running? It literally is a science experiment, but the things that Sarabia were talking to were things that any farmer could potentially do. Like you plant a specific plant species, that is Namibian. It's found in the Namibian wild. You find it everywhere. It's the preferred grass species for your cattle. Let's say for that example. The downside is that the moment that that you have dry conditions, like very dry conditions,
which we more often have
during a calendar year. Yeah. The downside is that this plant or this grass increases its silicon level in the dietary allocation, let's say, to a cow.
So that's the plant's own defense mechanism.
It's things that some of us would still remember from our days on high school when we were taught that life sciences subject, that very weird subject. Uh-huh. You remember life sciences?
Yeah, I do.
That very weird subject that taught us how to try to garden, and we were explained the differences between the various soil structures like clay and sandy and the pH levels of those things.
Yeah.
What we were supposed to learn as well, incorporated into that the subject matter, was also what happens when you add too much potassium, for example, or what happens, for example, when you strip soil from a specific nutrient. And many farmers who are in the crop cultivation side of things.
Nutrients from a specific soil.
Yeah, from a specific soil type. Or what happens when you rip out all the plants and you create artificial desiccation in that scenario? Because you lose the topsoil, which is the most important part of the soil structures
for plant growth.
For plant growth. And also for water retention and also for soil retention as well. The downside is that now all the crop farmers know how to look after nature. The nature that they need for the crops that they need to, you know, plant within that specific soil structure or in that specific environment. It's the livestock farmers. And every time I see, it's the livestock farmers that continuously come out as that they are unfortunately, livestock farmers play a good role. If there were no borders and if they were not told to be anchored down into one spot, livestock farmers are the best people to try and feed nutrients into the soil,
mm-hmm.
because wherever the animal goes, the droppings of the animal sort of like nourishes or supplies nutrients for the soil. And when it rains there, obviously certain plants obviously benefit from the mutual relationship that they enjoy from certain animals.
Yeah.
For example, there's a plant that grows in our garden. My sister went and tried to find out how can you try and replant this plant, because it's a highly protective plant, Helmut. Not many people know where this plant comes from. The plant, what's that plant association of Namibia? They were asked, my sister approached them, asked them, how can I try and replicate this plant's growth? Like me, like you taking a seed or seed pod and then try to plant it over.
Yeah.
And the answer she got was literally that they don't know how. No one has ever been successful in that experiment, because all they know is it's a specific bird that eats that specific seed. And then that bird has to defecate the seed out in its droppings. And the droppings act as a particular stimulant. So you
need in the digestive system of
that specific bird. So you can obviously see the mutual relationship between nature and nature.
Yeah.
Between plant and animal.
So it's a food chain.
And that's also what, in the, let's call it the pre-colonial concept or open border concept specifically, how pastoralists helped to also grow and resuscitate, you know, certain kinds of lands.
Yeah.
You let the people roam free with their herds. Their herds then obviously leave their droppings. The droppings then contain these seeds that move through their digestive systems. If you don't know what a digestive system includes, there are enzymes and specific kinds of microbes.
Also, yeah, microbes, yeah.
That literally, help to sort of like, what do we call that thing? Germinate, to germinate the particular seed pods and the stuff.
Yeah.
And you find the plant literally growing in certain areas where you would go like, wow, I didn't know this plant could grow here. Yeah, I first need to breathe. So, coming back from that particular discussion, the downside what Sarabia explains is, since a farmer, a livestock farmer, is now technically cornered into their four corners of their farm, commercial or communal, you can only operate in that piece of land that you have access to. The downside is now being cornered off or cordoned off, you're now actually causing more harm. Because now you, the livestock farmer, you firstly have to try and it's in a place like Namibia. I don't know if you heard the one guy that asked, that asked Sarabia the question about where Sarabia was talking about trying to crossbreed certain cattle breeds, with each other to try and find a drought resistant cattle breed.
Yeah, because that's the quality that Ngunis are very good for.
Okay. Do you know what the Germans tried doing when they landed here in Namibia and after the genocide?
Yeah.
That period just before the First World War. Do you know what they tried to do?
Mm-hmm.
The Germans tried to domesticate the zebra.
How'd that go?
Super unsuccessful.
I'm so curious.
Do you know why?
Uh-huh.
The downside was that the Germans realized that their horses were not resistant to a specific pest that was here.
And which the zebras were.
But the zebras are most natural. So they are resistant.
They've developed a defense mechanism.
Yeah. So the horses that the Germans brought here from Germany, they're military horses. The downside is the horse is here for 6 months. The horse then dies from this disease, from this specific pest, which is an insect, basically.
Yeah.
The downside was then they looked to the zebra. They looked to the zebra. The zebra is like, no, bruh.
Nah.
I have evolved to such a level where you and me, we will never understand each other.
Yeah.
I don't even understand the hyena and the buffalo and the rhino even. Why must I understand you, the human?
First of all,
the other humans are even riding their own cattle.
Uh-huh.
Why must I understand?
Some of them are walking. How dumb do you think they are?
It was...
Those guys that are walking have been here.
It was literally a experiment, and it was one of the weirdest experiments because it was something weird to read. But it's an unfortunate thing. They tried this.
Which poor guy did they, you know?
No, they tried it themselves. They tried it themselves. That because the downside was, Helmut, there is another, besides the Nguni, there is another African cattle breed that is literally resistant. I don't know if you've heard of the Afrikaner. The Afrikaner, bulky, stocky, not as lean as the Nguni.
Yeah.
But there's also been other particular production methods that have showed that farmers that farm with Nguni cattle, technically the gene pool is pretty thin. So you start getting weird things, like weird diseases and things that pop up because the gene pool is too thin. And it's an argument I heard from South African.
So gene pool being too shallow is bad for all animals.
Yeah. Herman. It's the same with us humans.
Yeah.
Hence the reason you don't do the Habsburg thing.
No. Hence we have that as a thing, the name.
Can't
believe someone took a royal family name and gave it to a condition.
Well, they thought, and it was a pretty incorrect hypothesis. They thought.
They were just power hungry.
I know. For them to literally, okay. If anyone who watches too much Game of Thrones would know, there's a specific family that's also into that.
Yep.
Loving the family member situations.
Mm. the Lannister family. I checked. Just why?
Well, we also saw that very weird reality, Hamoud, in one particular media statement. I mean, that happened just in last month, of a father who...
The Habsburg, look, the Habsburg situation is, I think it's one of those things. Look, there are two scientific stories that basically, or more like scientific observations, or more like conclusions that have proven two things. One, well, keeping it in the family is a bad idea. And two, there's a reason why we don't have human kapana. Because, in the 1950s, scientists also found out in Equatorial Guinea, that it turns out that, eating one of your own, bad idea. So it turns out, you know,
have you seen the documentary of the CNN or the BBC, investigative journalist that did a documentary by meeting real, still modern day cannibals?
Modern cannibals, 21st century?
Yeah. Well, yeah. On that note, guys, ad break.
With either a non-alcoholic Heineken, Savannah, Vintook Original, or Vintook Lemon, let's cheers to connecting, to moments shared and good vibes, anytime, anywhere. Grab one of our great tasting non-alcoholic beers or ciders. Easy to connect, easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than The Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
Welcome back. We continue now from cannibalism, don't try that. Keeping it in the family, don't even try that too. It turns out Mother Nature wanted us to... Yeah. Explore. Yeah. Now, coming back to... So that's also true for animals, including cattle. So because of the shallow gene pool, you are dealing with more chaos than you would if you had a deep one.
Yeah. Reason being, Helmut, is that sometimes if you need a stocky kind of a drought-resistant kind of a animal species, the best is you need to crossbreed them. Which is also one of some of the downsides of people who love purebred or purebred horses and dogs. The same too also with for example, like with pigs, for people who are pig farmers. And the whole thing about animal husbandry and animal rearing, it's literally a discipline itself.
Yeah, it is.
and just like I told you, Helmut, in one of our earlier discussions this year, that if you're a cattle farmer, whatever farmer you might be, but as long as it's at livestock, these are walking investments. So you've got to look after them. You've got to get the best quality kind of breeding process in. You ensure that you try to replicate the growth of this specific plant species so that they have access to feed, you know, to feed during the drought periods of the year, or you try and go for something else. Now, I'm really sorry that the scientists in the audios that I sent you, when they kept referencing to C4, and I sat there, you know, this, I know someone will come and think that there's a C4 kaboom. And there's not C4 munch for cattle. So, the particular outlet and viewpoint based upon the discussion of De La Puerta and Sarabia was a scenario of datasets exist. If datasets exist, you know, how could they be accessed? If they don't exist, what needs to be done? And in many cases, it's usually an interoperability discussion that they're not linked to each other. Now, do you know what Sarabia found out about cattle breeds in Southern Africa?
No.
South Africa sits with a massive database on cattle breeds, cattle breeding, illnesses that impact cattle, as well as also best methods of farming with certain kinds of cattle breeds.
Yeah.
Now, there are Namibian farmers that studied in South Africa and you have universities in South Africa that have an agricultural department. Né? But then you've got literally agricultural colleges. They train the next level of agricultural practitioners for South Africa. Now in Namibia, we had something like that. Tumas on the other side of Marintal.
Mm.
Or should I say other side of Kalkrand. Noidames was the new one here on the way out to the airport. But Tumas is the oldest between them.
Mm-hmm.
Tumas was literally just an agricultural college before 1990. That was what Tumas was. And Tumas wasn't a TVET per se. Reason being is that they obviously realized that there's a lot of sheep farmers and cattle farmers in the whole of Hartab and in Karas, the two regions itself. The newest agricultural practices that were brought onto the table, obviously, was the green scheme on the Orange River, Ausenkeer, and who's the other one? There's another one also. And then these guys that decided to diversify on the other side of Marintal, the guy that has the watermelon plantations, and the other guy that I interviewed at the start of the year, who's an association leader of the local, live crop cultivating farmers in the Hartab region. The guys that had an issue when NamWater said they will have to sort of like switch off the pipe that supplies their plantations.
Yeah.
Because at that stage, the rain did not fall as yet so nicely in January, before it started literally falling very nicely for all of us across the country. So that particular conversation itself was one that highlighted, okay, so there's some diversification taking place. Some farmers are balancing by having livestock and crops. The downside is, Helmut, and this is forever. I will forever still praise South Africa. I'm really sorry. We can have so many Namibians that can show up and be patriotic about stuff.
Uh-huh.
But you know what? When there's someone stronger, bigger, more advanced than you, like the day that I sat at that climate change conference which NCRST hosted with the South African universities. South Africa has an agency that funds its universities to do research for Southern Africa. Let me say this again. It's not a ministry funding the universities for all their programs just.
Mm-hmm.
They have an agency that
like an SOE or is just a private agency?
You could think of it as an SOE, but it functions in an academic sense, mm-hmm. meaning it's, for example, like what what the American Army did with the creation of the internet. They said, here is funding. We need a digital repository for all knowledge that humanity has generated. And we need these universities to be these knowledge hubs, to have these nodes of knowledge. Now, unless in Namibia we realize that research and development is an economy itself and by itself. And instead of stop trying to have the NCRST do everything, each ministry also needs to say, hey, listen, let's, for example, say NCRST is in charge of things that are in the scientific, technological, and overall research discussion. But what about empowering, let's, for example, say, what's the one for law?
Law Society.
The Law Society.
Yeah.
empowering the law society to have an R&D function to itself, to try and empower, to try and research new laws, the impact of old laws on modern day, on the modern day societal.
Whether they fit into this modern day way of life or they need to be repealed or.
Verstanje, Helmut, verstanje. Now, the downside of what we are doing currently in Namibia is that we are trying to say, okay, everything that's research goes through one agency and it comes through one ministry. But Ministry of Agriculture can do its own R&D. It can fund its own R&D projects to assist communal and commercial farmers together, to assist its green schemes. Ministry of Finance can also run specific R&D programs to assist in modern economic policy making and in modern policy policy targeted interventions, for example. Because here's the downside.
Yeah.
Ministry of Finance, I know, they do their best to try and say, you know what, it's not we that choose the programs of the other ministries.
That prioritizes in terms of financing. Yeah.
It's these other ministries that come and tell them, this is the budget that we would like. These are the projects that are found in, that are to be covered in this proposed budget.
Yeah.
And we will tell them, this is the budget you can get.
Yeah.
So, unless if you are an executive director listening right now to us, guys, you have to realize you have to spend money on R&D.
Yep.
You have to spend money on R&D. Even if you're Ministry of Finance, you have to spend money on R&D. Why? Because our discussion last year when you and I dissected the R&D report that NCRST brought out, whose financing had decreased in a 5-year, 7-year period? The government's R&D, the government side of R&D financing. Where is the biggest discrepancy of R&D? In the humanities fields and other non-scientific based aspects. For example, we don't know about whether or not a film industry would be feasible in Namibia. We don't know. Now we are having, we've got the central bank, we've got the Ministry of of MASAC, the super ministry, the president, the national plan itself, the national development plan, everyone is now trying to, you know, sort of like endorse this whole new drive. Let's get the creative sector going. Yeah, it sounds all good, Helmut.
Yeah.
Until, remember what that musician said at that one discussion by the National Arts Council that was held? Yeah. Everyone wanted to be a musician because there was money available.
Uh-huh.
And all they had to do was now randomly just produce things. And everyone was like, what are you singing about?
I was born inside, but I died outside. That's why they call me carbon dioxide. Someone decided to become a rapper.
Oh my goodness. No.
What?
But no, okay, not what you did. That was skillful, Amo. Oh, you know what? Next time you can subscribe to the Green Hydrogen program.
Seriously, dude?
You can diversify. How pink hydrogen just does not fit with gray hydrogen. Yeah.
Look, that's where the money was. What do you expect homeboy to do?
Of course. Yeah. And what was, and how did many people approach that particular scheme? They approached it like, oh, this is my opportunity to actually earn something because I don't have a job.
Yeah, so people didn't do it because they really had a genuine, call it a calling if you want to go the religious way. But they just did it because that was the only available way that they can make a buck. And that can be said, the same can be said for a lot of professions and disciplines.
Mm.
You have I know a lot of soccer players with advanced degrees and a lot of actors with advanced degrees, but they are pursuing their career. Now, what do you think they would be doing if their film industry or their sports industry was not as functional as it is? They would probably be in the class somewhere playing lecture.
And do you know why they did that? It's because their parents came and knocked a little bit of reality in them to say, hey, listen, my brah.
Yeah.
You know, acting like Cristiano Ronaldo, on the weekends will only get you so far.
Yeah, because, well, Cristiano Ronaldo, Portugal, you're in Namibia, my homie.
Cristiano Ronaldo does not have to pass high school. He's in a market
where
they can pay him $500,000 a week.
That market is one also, yeah, it's one of those things that was also pointed out in the audios.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, before you ask yourself, you know, a market is telling you this and this and this that we are producing, we are buying. The rest, they throw that away.
Yeah. That's when, and that came from a commercial farmer. That guy that gave that answer.
Yeah, the one that said there's no market for giraffe meat, for example.
There is no market. Helmut, literally, there is no such market.
Like, everyone is gonna go like, okay, thank you. Thank you very much. We have a lot of giraffes, but,
you should try having a weird conversation with a tourist that comes to Namibia. Mm-hmm. The first thing I'll tell you, did you ever have alligator meat, alligator steak? And then you sit there as a Namibian going like, what are you eating? And then they would tell
you. So it's more explorative for them than.
They must fly here to Namibia. And then you obviously have the various particular cuisine outlets. There's one very famous one. You know about it. You know, here on your way through Eros. That particular cuisine outlet. And then it's on the menu. Do you know the one time that I ate there, the two times I ate there, I ate pork and I ate beef.
Those are mostly the things that I'm on.
But that's the thing that we Namibians do.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, Helmut.
I found myself in a Thai restaurant and I was eating pork.
No, but I'm still trying to find up until this day, isn't there like a national dietary guideline? For how much a Namibian adult needs to eat, man and woman, and developing child, boy and girl, and you know what are the prerequisite foods that are cleared by the Ministry of Health for consumption, for a perfectly healthy Namibian man and woman or Namibian boy and child, boy and girl to eat. The reason why that has been, I am stipulating that particular directive is that, I saw it in a specific, social media post. Not a social media, YouTube is a social media function as well. Where this particular creator spoke about that the United States at one stage in the 70s, they didn't have an obesity problem. There was a set guideline, a national dietary guideline.
You know, I never thought of it like that.
That people had to follow. And then in between, the corporations, the agricultural corporations in the US decided, you know what, let's try and add more value. Let's
cut corners.
No, you can't say corner cutting, because when you go look at what they actually do, what they did, Helmut, was present a convenience factor. The convenience being, Helmut, you can literally, instead of cooking a meal, you can buy something that's cheaper than the ingredients that you would find on your dinner plate. If let's just, for example, say you made dinner.
Yeah.
The downside is that you might not have a full level of trust in is what are the inputs while at the agricultural production level, meaning at the farmer's level, what is the farmer using as nutrients in the ground, as supplements to the animals, or the kind of care that the farmer provides for both plant and animal well-being in terms of producing the optimum best level of agricultural products for a market. That's the only concern that I specifically have. Because the stories I've heard about the US is that the biggest concern that the Europeans have with the US and the UK has with the US is that the US imports so many cattle from Mexico. Cattle. Live exports.
Yeah.
Live imports. And that the US can literally, they can give you, from the farm to the shopping center, like a track and trace system.
Information of what their cattle is being fed.
As well as also from where the cow comes from.
Yeah.
The downside is because they import so much live cattle from Mexico, it gets mixed into the American overall cattle population. So the Europeans and the UK are very suspect of what the American meat producers are doing, because you don't know if you're getting Mexican beef or you're getting actual American beef. And if
so, the one they don't trust, is it the American one or the Mexican one?
The whole American thing, because the Americans import this live cattle from Mexico.
Yeah.
Then the downside is, much of the US's production is geared towards their own agro processes,
mm-hmm.
meaning meat processing plants, vegetable and fruit processing scenarios. And then you don't know what they're going to export to you. You don't know what they're going to export to you.
What's the difference? What's the difference other than I can imagine breeds? I think the main difference is going to come out of feeding, how the cattle are fed, or more like taken care of, like health wise in terms of vaccinations and stuff, between the American ones and the Mexican ones. Because one thing I know, that's why why I brought up the whole cutting corners thing is because if you look at a food brands.
Yeah.
And I think we did, we did a whole show on this where you have, you can buy a product in the US and one in Canada of the same food brand. And you look at the ingredients and you have, on the American, variant, you have a whole list, more like a paragraph of ingredients. But when you look at the Canadian counterpart, you're going to see a very short level of ingredients, most of which are especially artificial sweetener, most of which are going to be filled with artificial sweeteners for the American version and artificial colorants. But for coloring, for sweetening and coloring in a lot of countries, especially the EU, they try to source as much natural from the natural. Take for example, if they want a type of food to have a carrot type of color, they would source the color from the carrot.
Yeah.
If they want a type of food to have a watermelon type of taste, they will source the sweetener, or more like the sweetening agent from watermelon. But the thing is, there are synthetic versions to all these things, which is very common in the US. But not common in a lot of countries. I think that's where the EU becomes very suspicious for especially food products that's coming out of the US.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is why I think gathering information in terms of in terms of agriculture, now you have to be very specific, because for markets that are, if I can call them, paranoid for a very good reasons, like the like the EU, they are not just like that when it comes to food. They're like that when it comes to electronics. They have very strict laws of what comes into their country, and that's the reason why they, Apple brought back this, got rid of the lightning and brought back the lightning charging port and, charging system back to the C-type.
Yeah.
Because the EU was like, okay, now, just what's going on here? We understand the aesthetic that comes with it, but then what?
Yeah.
So environmentally friendly, out through the window.
And it's also concerns of, obviously, you have markets that look after the, let's call them consumers.
We are willing to buy your stuff.
Yeah.
But we want to know what you're feeding us.
And we want
to. That's the EU.
And we want to know if it's the thing that I see.
Yeah.
Is that the thing that's going to be on my plate?
Yeah.
Now, when obviously the Europeans, they're very pragmatic. They will ask you, yeah, now let's watch the process.
Yeah.
They really want to see an audited function take place in front of them, where they can be trusted. Okay, so that's what the process is.
No wonder they're having a problem with religion.
Helmut, that's why I made the reference to the scientific, our research and development.
Mm-hmm.
Because we here in Africa, specifically here in Southern Africa, we have to realize that there's a reason why education exists. There's a reason why education exists. And when the labor force survey came out at the start of the year, when you and I went like, hey, 500,000 people have to look after 3 million.
No, mission.
500,000 separately have to look after 2.5 million people. And in that 500,000, we're less than 200,000 that have, degrees or have finished high school and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it becomes even smaller if you take out the guys that just finished high school.
Yeah.
It becomes even worse. Like, they realized how many people just have grade 12, but they sit in managerial positions in companies and corporations and other organizations. And then you and I, we're even becoming happier about hearing about free tertiary education, even though we already have tertiary education on top of that, plus job, plus market experience. And then we sit there thinking, it's a...
not good, not good. Okay, look, but when it comes to gathering information on how to best practice agriculture in a way that it contributes significantly to, it contributes significantly to the economy, it's, especially for us, by us, I mean subsistence farmers, whether you're farming with crops, whether you're farming crop farming or animal husbandry, we have a lot to do. Because, for one, farming for a commercial, for subsistence level.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. Except if you want to farm in a way that to participate in the economy, you're gonna have to go commercial. Now, going commercial means narrowing down what exactly is it that you wanna do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you look at it on a subsistence level, what we have is not a specific method of farming or more like a specific type of farming. You have a hodgepodge type of things going on because the same person wants to have, want to farm with pigs, want to farm with chicken, want to farm with cattle for both beef and transport.
Mm.
I hope no one is doing that. Yeah. And, yeah, and milk.
Transport, how much?
Yeah.
Is this the 1700s? Are we talking about the Deutschland trekkers here?
Take you some places someday. I say just there, you know.
What, where they will have cattle athletics?
Yeah, unfortunately. Now, the thing is, what you have here is the International Labour Organization.
Mm.
Is that the International Labour Organization? And that's where I think there is one. It's the International Labour Organization. Yeah, the International Labour Organization met in 2015 in Geneva, Switzerland, where they had a discussion around how to formalize the informal economy. You want to formalize it so that it becomes a part of the the informal economy, so that it participates on the large scale in terms of contributing to the economy of the country.
Mm.
But the thing is, I don't think that's possible to pull off if, first of all, you don't know what one person is farming with. Because if you have a confused farmer, which is basically most of us are, which is why we are mostly left on a subsistence level. Because if you take, for example, a lot of subsistence farmers and try to figure out where they fit in the formal economy, it's going to be very difficult, because you will find Helmut that has pigs on one side, chicken on one side, cattle on one side, and he has an army of dogs for security purposes, of course. And
but then those dogs find themselves usually just roaming about there, you know, just minding their own business.
Yeah. Actually, those ones are mostly used for what is actually a headache for the Ministry of Environment and Tourism, you know.
Hunting, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, you have all these things going on. Now, this is very standard for subsistence level. Now, when it comes to things like providing for the family more like, food and, sustenances. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But if you want commercial participation, you're going to have to be very specific as to, if you are going crop farming, which crop are you farming? And how much do you know that crop? And first of all, also the most important question that was asked in the audio. Who is buying it? If you are farming with a cow for beef, who's your target market? If you're farming with a cow for milk, who's your target market? If you're farming with a crop, broccoli. Who's your target market?
Yeah, that guy will forever be a sort of like our benchmark.
That guy's gonna walk in here one day and go like, okay, seriously.
And he said, Dwight, you know what? That's not what I meant, Dwight, by sharing. But man, you should have known about the uses.
Exactly. And look, that's actually a very good example of why looking at the market, after figuring out, or more like after using a market to pick a type of, take for example, of agricultural practice you want to venture into, instead of using an agricultural practice to try and pick a market.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you just first look at the market and then figure out, okay, where the loopholes that you could easily exploit to your own economic advantage, then you can go with that. It's much easier because even after we come up with that, you will easily find out that, okay, you know what, this is the market I'm supplying.
Yeah.
Like the gentleman pointed out, you have a specific market that has very specific demands. This and this and this and this, we are buying. The rest, it's not that we hate your business. We just don't want to buy. We are not going to force people to buy something they don't want to buy.
And if they don't want to eat it and they don't know, firstly, they don't know what it is. It doesn't matter how many times you give literal presentations of or demonstrations of, this is how you eat it. I'm sorry, my guy.
This is how you prepare it. This is how you eat it. And everyone's
people
like,
will still go like, but I still don't know what the thing is.
Thank you, but still no.
You know, leafy greens is my business, but really.
That bulb thing in the middle.
Whatever that massive thing is.
It looks nice, but
looks like a tree by itself, you know?
Yeah.
But the concern here is obviously also, Helmut, that when you look at data.
Just hold that data concern while we go for a commercial break on the other side. Home run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM.
Heineken's iconic balanced taste that gives you that refreshing first. Only made possible by Heineken's 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Sometimes you have to raise a Vinduk beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Vinduk beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Vinduk, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Esira shisho, pagyo tadi kukwathere opovoro kara uwasira ya kweni ochisho. Watu chithana basic mental health first aid course. Taiga njua oshari chamhongi kwa mboka iri iyo NHP. Watapewa unongo unonseo na kene una okutongorora omadidiriko ugope. Tameko igena cha nupiakadhi nenge omathidakano opama vira viro. Kuchane omokatiko kumekoe nenge anironga. Pamwe nangoe osho otopewa unongo ngene una okuya kwathera nokuya pa eabidido yiri monjira omanga upya kadiboka inauru darara kuyerere ounji na hene unokara uishangitha tarira po epanja yao yo nhp.com.na epango na maradura thano odovina okurandurwa NHP rooted in care for you
your health your life your peace of mind NHP, we're about you.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%, is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. We continue. Where were you?
So, the concern obviously, Helmut, is
on
that
data.
On when it comes to data, is there. I'll say it again. The data is there.
In very raw form.
No, not even in raw form.
Really?
You can even try and, what do they call that thing? You can access South African data and try and understand what's in a Namibian context. It's the same thing I discovered last year, 2024, when I went to the psychometric testing announcement that the Ministry of Labor at the time had announced that they're going to do psychometric tests for the Namibian economy. Mm. Psychometric tests are there to measure the aptitudes of people in who, you know, want to do certain positions and certain jobs in the country, and they measure you. They try to see where do you lie? Where do you fall on this test scaling or this ranking situation? And then one guy sat there, and he asked the question. He wasn't from a university, but it was like from an employers federation or an, a workers union. He was from one of the two. And then he asked the question of the lead, the psychologist that, she's a psychologist in the Ministry of Labor. The Ministry of Labor obviously doesn't exist anymore, but she's a psychologist in the ministry. And she was asked, you know, because when the questions and answers situation happened, she was asked, yeah, so how do we know that we're not just using North American or European data and examples and templates for a Namibian Southern African discussion? And she answered it very eloquently by saying, well, the South Africans have already done a mapping exercise,
which is based upon
South African, Namibian, Botswanan, and Zimbabwean data sets for psychometric test scaling and ranking. And I sat there going like, every time
South Africa
keeps popping up in research and development, in skills and capacity development. And every time we as Namibia, we look to the UN to sort the issue out, which is you can find the knowledge just across the border.
Yeah.
Just across the border. It's just a phone call. You can even make a phone call to South Africa, Helmut, and say, hey, Helmut, listen, man. You know about that VBS thing, you know? Do you have extra money there? You can actually do that. Yeah, I know, I'm just, you know.
VBS example. Do you have some left?
Sorry, guys. You know, I smashed in there two examples completely, which is completely different from the example I want. But that literally shows the interconnectedness of where we are missing this idea of data, access to data and discussions. Because as Sarabia was doing his presentation, because he was the next presentation after De La Puerta. De La Puerta obviously invited him. So, dear listeners, just to set the scene for you, the discussion was that there is a Spanish scientist. She has these regular presentations in Namibia, and she would always invite colleagues of hers from Spain to come and give knowledge, because Namibia's climate and some of the conditions that you would find here is similar to like in Spain.
Yeah.
Because Sarabia was like, when he drove from Jose Agotaco to Windhoek, he was like, why does this place look like home? Spain. Why does this place look like home? That's how he literally said that statement. Now, De La Puerta did her presentation first. Now, she's been long enough in Namibia. I think she's close to 10 years been in Namibia.
Yeah.
And she does many of her work in conjunction with UNAM, with the University of Namibia. And she obviously now knows and has a lot of exposure to various farming methods in Namibia,
yeah.
Various kinds of climatic conditions in Namibia, as well as also the most important thing that pesters agriculture a lot is obviously plant diseases and animal diseases, meaning plant welfare and animal welfare.
That's before you throw in the unpredictable weather patterns
that
climate change.
That too, yeah. Now, she herself has said she has discovered that South Africa sits with a ton of knowledge of Southern Africa. Now, I bring you back to that before this presentation, this discussion that we're basing our discussion on today.
Yeah.
Before that, a week before that, I attended that climate change discussion that was hosted here. Helmut, that Southern African climate change discussion was more impactful, had more knowledge sharing capabilities and capacity than we sending even our president flying off to Brazil at Belém in Brazil for COP30. More knowledge popped up here 2 weeks before she flew versus her being there. And it's nothing bad. She's a head of state. She obviously, there were certain particular things and functions she needed to attend and participate in.
Member states, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And obviously show face. She's a head of state and all those particular functions and aspects. Mm. However,
observing protocol.
These scientists that were here, much of them South African, coming and two Zimbabwean universities and one Namibian university in attendance. The Namibian university guys were not even there as in full force to the level that the South Africans were there. We had more NCRST officials than university officials from our universities at that same function, at that same conference. About climate change. We're the only country that has, in the world, that has two deserts in its borders. And
we're
sandwiched. Yeah. And we have more SOE officials than university scholars and academics from our local universities present at a climate change conference hosted in Namibia. I'll say it again. Even the presentations were dominated by the South Africans and the Zimbabweans. Mm. Now you got to ask yourself the question of, waar is die Namibians? Where are the Namibians? Why are we not stepping up to the plate of generating research and knowledge and all those things? We sign all these lovely MOUs, for example, the MOU with Radboud about observing space. But Namibia's first concern should not be about developing a space program, because we are way off in that discussion.
Yeah.
What we need to understand is that the space program needs to feed the climate change discussion. The climate change discussion impacts us more than us understanding the sky.
Okay, the first thing you have to figure out is it 70 billion in 70 years? baby steps here. Go easy. We're here talking about space. The question, do we have enough houses? Let's start from there. True. I like to point that out because, if you can't afford to supply housing.
Yeah.
Don't think about spacing. If housing is expensive, forget about space.
Yeah.
Because space is super demanding, not just in the physical hardware that's needed to carry out the missions, but the skills required. The investment in this, in the research and development of space is insane. Look at NASA's budget. It's crazy. Now, putting all that aside, it's also going to bring you to, brings us to one in terms of this whole space discussion.
Yeah.
Gathering this information requires you to have, again, we are back to the, how can we exploit IT to our advantage on a SADC level? First, you need the physical infrastructure. One. And then you need, first of all, you need the skills. One. And you need the physical infrastructure. And then you need people that are trained enough to run this, to run these institutions, because one mistake, that whole thing goes kaboom.
Helmut.
What's that?
You can make mistakes.
You can.
Remember what's that Apollo mission that exploded?
Yeah, that one that exploded. Now, that was cutting corners.
Well, it was cutting corners, yeah. But also they did not trust, who was it? They did not trust the engineers. Because the engineers said, please don't launch on this day.
Yeah, because it's too cold.
The weather conditions will create an accident for us.
Yeah.
Because of just a rubber? A rubber sealant.
Yeah.
Because all they said was, this rubber sealant can...
They are not going to expand in this weather.
Exactly. Yeah. Plus, the freezing point that takes place at the lowest point of the nighttime will make the rubber sealant brittle. Yeah. And literally, when you launch...
Now you have a leak.
Now you've got a leak. Whereas they needed just a few hours to delay by...
That's the damn thing about mixing science with politics. Because at this point, they had already made promises to politics. To a bunch of politicians.
To a politician. To the
JFK,
president.
Right?
Yeah, to JFK.
Yeah.
They made the promise to
JFK. We are launching
JFK.
At this time.
So we need you then. JFK is like, okay, my schedule is very busy.
I mean, I've spent the whole night with Marilyn Monroe. Let's talk about agriculture.
You do know he already had a side chick while he was married at that stage.
Wasn't that Marilyn Monroe?
No.
Okay.
He's, okay. Slight history detour. He was already married to, what was the lady's name? The lady that went on.
Is it Jackie Kennedy?
Yeah, Jackie Kennedy was his wife.
Yeah.
Marilyn, but there was another woman. It wasn't Marilyn.
No, bro, he was
looking at Marilyn.
Mm-hmm.
But he already had a side chick. And that was what made Jackie was so angry, you know. And then after he died, she married the Greek billionaire, Onassis. My mom explained to me the whole situation there. She went from a first lady to just super money. But she already had super money because the Kennedys are already like trust fund family.
Trust fund babies, yeah.
Yeah, they're like major trust fund babies.
Yeah, so.
Not that the two cousins currently in the American Senate talk to each other. The two guys.
The other one talks. The other one, I don't
know. No, but they don't even understand each other because the one that can talk, he doesn't think much of it's most like his far off cousin.
Yeah.
He doesn't think much of the guy. And this one doesn't care, the one who can barely speak because of that speech impediment he has.
Yeah.
He doesn't care what this cousin thinks of him.
You know, typical family drama. It's in every family. Don't worry.
I mean, for it to be displayed like that, you know, it's
terrible. Like, the thing is, these guys promised politicians the space station is ready.
Yeah. Now, the launch is ready.
The launch is ready. Yeah. The launch is ready. And scientists who are basically working on data, they told them, we don't care what you promised the president. We don't control the weather.
Yeah.
Today is way colder for these sealants to basically work properly, as they are expected to be.
Yeah.
And someone's like, are you kidding me? We're talking about the president here.
And just because they needed to host a president on a launch.
Mm-hmm. So that someone can say, one step for mankind. What's that nonsense?
And this is one step. What? That's one giant leap for mankind. One something.
Yeah, one small step one for small mankind.
One small step.
Giant step for
something. Or humanity. Something.
Yeah,
or
for humanity.
Yeah.
So that speech killed a bunch of very skilled people.
No, that was the wrong speech at the wrong time, Helmut.
Really? Wasn't given at that very same, because that would have been weird.
Do you know that?
I would have gone with a one step.
Do you know that I discovered?
I discovered
the other day that the guys that are apparently behind the misinformation that we've landed, that we've never landed on the moon, are guys that they were the ones that were, how did they do it? They went and did like a whole PowerPoint presentation about how this was supposedly faked.
Supposedly hoax, yeah.
But if you have grandparents that can tell you, but we saw it on the first TVs that came into Namibia. We saw they heard about the moon landing. So now how are you going to dispute that the Russians were not the first in space?
Well,
the Russians first sent a cockroach, then a dog, then a monkey into space, and then they sent the first woman into space, and then they sent the first man to literally circumnavigate the whole planet. So why would you say it's fake?
Okay, now you're missing something here, Dwight. We live on a planet, according to Neil deGrasse Tyson, with people that believe that the Earth is flat, but the Moon is round, the Sun is round, the Mars is round, Neptune, all.
No, it's apparent. Do you know what's the worst part?
Uh-huh.
Those guys were apparently created by a writer, an English writer, Terry Pratchett. It's a guy that I don't read. When I realized he is behind the whole flat Earth, the resurgence of the flat Earth, the flat Earthers.
Yeah.
Because there's even a British guy on YouTube. His whole channel is to prove flat Earth is wrong, and to make jokes of them. Helmut, how does a Greek with no advanced technology, how does a Greek come to the conclusion that the Earth is round? An ancient Greek, during the period of Alexander the Great, because the guy lived in Alexandria,
Go even older than that.
Yeah.
The pyramids of Giza has all the schematics and measurements that indicates both the radius and the circumference. Now, let me repeat that again. The circumference.
Yeah.
That is only, the circumference is when you're talking about something that is
round.
Thank you.
Yeah. So no, there are two measurements. You remember diameter?
You have the diameter and you have the circumference.
The circumference, yeah. Those are the two measurements used to measure circles and balls. Let's use balls for.
Mm-hmm. Really trying not to laugh, but the point is.
Yeah, I also realized the pun in that, the heavy pun in that. You can see when people didn't pay attention in mathematics.
Yeah.
Well, I tried my best, guys. I'm sorry.
No, math was not my problem. Accounting was for me. But
that's even easier. Math was my problem.
Oh, no, it wasn't the subject. It was the teacher.
No, but math was also the teacher for me. But accounting is wonderful. It speaks to the one thing that keeps running away from me.
Money. Yeah, no. So, life read.
Before we continue the lessons, we're quickly taking a short break. Vyelvitsa University, where the 2026 applications are now open for the following new programs. For the Faculty of Health Sciences, the Master of Public Health Level 9, mode of delivery is distance, and the areas of specialization will include maternal child health, public health nutrition, mental health and well-being, food safety management systems, sustainable solid waste management, innovative approaches in pharmaceutical public health, drug regulations, child protection and adolescent health, and violence prevention and intervention. Application fee is $230 Namibian. Application deadline is 30 November 2025. For more information, please call 061-225-463 or 061-225-462. Vyelvitsa University, where everyone is an achiever.
So we have 10 minutes to basically round this all up. So back in 2023 or 2024, let me just confirm that. Back in 2023, the World Economic Forum sort of like looked at the complexity of information and more like data, you know, in the field of agriculture. But one conclusion they reached was that agriculture, if practiced properly, could basically solves a lot of problems.
Yeah.
And it also has the potential to contribute even more than it's already contributing to the global economy, because we're talking about respective countries.
Yeah.
One thing they pointed out was that in 2023 they pointed out that the enormity in terms of size, the enormity of size and the complexity of agricultural data, coupled with its fragmented nature, pose significant challenges to unlocking its potential economic value, estimated at $65 billion in India alone.
So what would it be in Namibia? Let's, for example, say if we could link. Remember that talk we had yesterday? No, not billion. Yesterday. When are we talking about the tourism? On Friday?
Yeah, I think it was on Friday.
Yeah. Imagine if you connected immigration statistics with that room occupancy level.
Yeah.
We could literally map, just with that basic data requirement, the intensity at which people are coming to Namibia to see Namibia. And
what
we could,
are they looking
and
at?
We could map at every urban settlement across Namibia what each town can offer. So now we are literally there in the dark, just
like, you know,
pulling at straws.
They went this direction. We don't know what they're going to see.
The last time we saw them was last week.
Uh-huh.
They were driving a rental buggy 4x4, a Ford version. And you know Fords, sometimes you know. They do lead you to prosperity. Other times you end up in Botswana.
One of the most controversial to others and very funny joke that, what's this, Jeremy, from
Jeremy Clarkson.
Jeremy Clarkson, Top Gear said was that the thing about he said that about Range Rover that Range Rovers took the British out of town and into the woods, and well they didn't come back. Now the thing is the same way that Toyota Toyota brought Africans out of the woods into the urban area. Like, seriously, dude.
Do you know what's the worst part? The other day, was it Clarkson or was it Richard Hammond, one of the two presented Lotus, Lotus the sports car,
the sports car, yeah.
So the challenge was that they show up with a old-ish, cheap supercar of a previous particular time period, now, from the 90s. And then James May shows up there with a Lotus, but from the 90s. And then he but the Lotus looks literally like it looks like a copycat of it's a mashup between a Ferrari Testarossa and a Lamborghini, Diablo. I don't know if you remember the Diablo Lamborghini, but when you put that Diablo right next to a Ferrari Testarossa, you would think it's the same car except for the emblems. It's just that the Diablo had a tail fin, a spoiler on its tail. Yeah. And the Testarossa's tail fin was slightly lower, closer to the body. So he shows up in this Lotus, and then Jeremy Clarkson goes like, "Oh my goodness!" He shows up in a Lotus, which is always known for making big promises but lots of trouble. No, it followed the literal name of Lotus.
Yeah,
lots of trouble. Promises or something promises a lot, but is lots of trouble. Yeah, I know. I mean, they were the only three journalists there that forced. It was a Jaguar or was it Aston Martin?
I like how they merged basically, you know,
and Koenigsegg.
I like how they merged marketing and made it very entertaining and, you know, for a lot of carburants.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can basically get to know get to know a lot about cars just from the dumb things that they do and say in all, you know, on all these trips.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a very, you know, interesting mesh of entertainment and marketing for me.
Mm.
Now, let's just, come back from the, you know, from the, diversion of Top Gear to agriculture in terms of, especially information that's needed.
Mm.
The World Economic Forum's, their own analysis indicates that, the global economy, global agriculture practice can contribute even more than it was already contributing to its respective economies. It can be improved. It can be improved. Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at it in terms of, let's just say, sub-Saharan Africa, a lot is needed in terms of, you know, I think, we can do that if we can, that's going to require a lot of, a change in point of view on how agriculture, should be practiced for commercial purpose. Because a lot of us have been practicing agriculture for actually every society before we in the Industrial Revolution, we're all agrarian. Now, the thing is, it was mostly agriculture on a subsistence level, just for me and my family. But now we live in the world where you have the potential to expand that practice to the point where it can be for you and your family plus commercialization. And there's a whole business model around, a lot of different, branches of agriculture.
Mm.
The question is, how now do you get to transition, a community, for example, that's been practicing subsistence agriculture for millennia.
Yeah.
To transition from that to commercial agriculture. The good news is that, it's not impossible because everyone that's practicing commercial agriculture, at some point, they had to transition from subsistence to commercial.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, what changes did they have to make? What are agriculture demands in a subsistence level and what are agriculture demands in a commercial level? Because they have completely, apart from the most obvious, which is being size and scale.
Yeah.
Because having 5 cattle, that's okay. But if you want to go commercial, you're gonna need more than that. And you're gonna be very specific as to which breed.
Yeah.
How do you feed them? How many times a year? And you also have to know, how old are they?
What are the particular diseases native to Namibia and those particular trains as well? Because here's the thing, Ahmed, it's a good thing, when I emphasized a little bit earlier that we need to sort of like leverage on the databases that South Africa already sits with, that they collected also in Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
But the most important thing is that we've got to achieve our own data synergy. And we don't need AI or anything sophisticated. We just need to have the very nice thing that Namibians are already doing, specifically like our ministries and government offices. Go sign an MOU. That's what we need.
With South Africa?
No, with each other even.
For the data interoperability?
Yeah.
Okay, but last time we talked about that, one thing that we discovered was that this data in a lot of these guys that are supposed to be interoperabilitying it is they haven't compiled this data in a way that they can easily share it with each other.
Nope.
Most of it is still in hard paper format.
Yep. Hard format.
Yep.
Not soft format.
Otherwise, they will have to be borrowing each other. But now, can I have your document? And
they first have to translate that hard format into soft format. So imagine.
Can you have this piece of information on this? I know it was borrowed by that ministry. Wait for it to come back, then we'll borrow it to you.
Imagine the labor. Imagine the contract of employment that you have to give to that person that has convert data sets from a paper to a database, a digital database.
Digitizing it.
Imagine how long it will take that person. It'll be super long.
That's going to take forever.
No, not forever. It'll be super long. That person will be literally be able to buy a car after they're done.
Yeah.
You know, with that exercise.
Now,
forget about scanning with a scanner.
Look, the thing is, I know someone who was at some point, you know, did her internship at, you know, at the, what's funny? OPM.
Yeah.
And they were one of the things she had to do was, digitizing, you know, this, hard copy information, more like, taking the information that they have in hard copy, most of it.
Yeah.
And then, putting it in their computer system so that they have it in their database. They were dealing with a massive amount of files.
Yeah, and imagine now.
A lot of them.
You've got...
Which I was like, okay, now that's interesting. Like the digitization process. I'm like, I'm so glad they have this in process because, they have this in place because it's, technology has made a lot of things very convenient.
Mm.
Yeah. So that ministry wants information on this. You can easily basically at a click of a button, you can go and get that information and share it with them. But if everything is in hard copy, and even if you have that well sorted out and you borrow it to them and then they end up, you know, losing it, now you have information that was very crucial to the, to your history and most likely the future decision making in one sector or, you know, in a particular sector that's now lost for good.
Well, it won't be lost for good, Helmut, because you need copies of the thing. But it's just where the copies are kept.
Finding it.
I mean, one of the most important things just before we end off was it was back in last year, a year literally after the UK's Queen Elizabeth passed away.
Yeah.
And then they explored the legacy of her, specifically in the former colonies of the UK.
Yeah. And after they shoved the president of every colony in the bus.
Yeah, that bus selfie took place.
Are we doing?
I'm so sorry. But after that selfie popped out, I was like, it's an immense smile. They're still smiling.
I know, right? They made it worse by smiling.
But anyway, getting back. Yeah, serious face now, serious face. So then, what was the TV state? It wasn't the BBC because it was, I think, Deutsche Welle. So Deutsche Welle went and commissioned this particular documentary about, the legacy of certain things in Kenya, of the British. And it started off with...
Oh, no, that's not a good one.
Yeah, and it started off with looking at the Mau Mau uprising.
Yeah.
Now, I don't like using the word rebellion because rebellion would mean that you're acknowledging a specific
position. The people were not supposed to uprise.
Yeah. Or you cannot claim ownership of something, mm-hmm. and then you must always be in a subservient.
Actually, they should have just said yes, master.
So
that's what the word rebellion is implying.
Yeah, that's what the word rebellion, because it's sort of like what they call it. What's that English word?
Language is important.
It sort of like diminishes the particular position and relationship between the two sides.
Yeah.
When I say diminish, it diminishes the position of the one that feels aggrieved.
Of the resistance, yeah.
Or let's just say of the rebel lore, because they're the one doing the rebelling against the rebel Lee.
They're just kicking British behind. They are not rebelling. And go on.
So it obviously starts there from that Mau Mau uprising discussion.
Yeah.
And they obviously looked at the legacy of the United Kingdom under Elizabeth, from the 1950s,
yeah,
heading this way.
Yeah.
In the same period, obviously, it was also the time period that things became a little bit bad now currently in Palestine. In terms of, you know, the whole occupation situation, because the Nakba must also start from 1951.
Yeah.
And at the same time, they also have the Korean War that took place.
Yeah.
The British decided to focus on India and on Kenya during that particular time. And they focused specifically on Kenya because of the Mau Mau uprising. Mm-hmm. And when things went bad, and obviously, you know, when Kenya, I think Kenya's independence was in the, was it 60s or 70s?
That's something in the 1960s. I have to check on that one.
So when the independence of Kenya came about, now the colonizing countries from Europe, they had a very interesting position here in Africa, known as the local governor or something, or lead, let's call it the lead colonial administrator.
A representative.
Yeah, but it's like, it's someone that is on the level, you could think of the person of literally as a prime minister designate, like a governor that has to report directly to a head of state back home.
Yeah.
It came about that when the British were pulling out of Kenya, starting that process of pulling out, all files were sent from Kenya to London. Now, they had a specific ministry in London, a ministry just for colonial affairs. It was literally by that name as well. This ministry started destroying all files.
Yeah.
Helmut. All files about Kenya. It started destroying all these files. So as not to, firstly, they transferred everything from Kenya to go destroy these files and these particular knowledge scenarios in Kenya.
Yeah.
Now, it was also the same particular discussion that, for example, the proponents of Namibia's genocide discussion here in Namibia, the proponents meaning the locals here in Namibia who are, you know, trying to get the genocide discussion to go into an advanced stage.
Mm-hmm.
It was the same thing that they're also actually calling for. Let's gain access to particular files or data sets that are kept in Germany.
That is that was in the 1950s. So it says Operation Legacy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when Kenya was about to get its independence, files were taken from Kenya, from the main administrator's office, and they were shipped to London, to the ministry. And that's at the same time that that ministry was also closed down.
Mm.
And then they started destroying the files. So guys, just to let you know, don't destroy files. They are crucial.
No, they didn't destroy them. They didn't destroy them all. They were actually really struggling to destroy this in, because they were dealing with a massive information. These guys have been, you're talking about, over 200 years of evidence that they're dealing with? A lot of information. So some of it, they, some of it they had to toss like in the middle of the ocean. And then some of it started, some of it, I think, started popping out, albeit the, the less sensitive one.
Mm.
Yeah. Some of it started popping out, out in the media world. That was, last year. Yeah, I think that's, as far back as in 2012. And, the point is, I think the British on that one, they were just wasting their time because,
with which one?
You know, they're trying to destroy colonial evidence.
They still have it.
They have the British Museum. That's why I'm not going on a heist with the British. These guys are terrible at stealing. who steals something and then label the day it was stolen, the person who stole it, and put it in a glass box for everyone to come and see.
And then someone flies from that country where it was taken from, going like, it's a, That's my grandfather's, you know, tombstone. What's going on there?
No, it's that's one. It wasn't stolen. It was collected. You see,
well, the manner in which we procured it, unfortunately, you know, it involved a few natives.
And then artifacts.
It involved a few natives, you know, that were helping me in terms of procuring and thus also transporting said particular.
And a lot
artifact.
Of it went missing last year. So they asked, you know.
One day it's there, the next it's gone.
They asked the public to help them trace it. Social media went
and everyone was like, there's your tombstone, bro.
And everyone was like, hang on a second. You want us to help you find someone that was, you know, find you some, we want us to help you trace something that was stolen from you, which you also stole. At this point, what are we doing? data itself, gathering it and processing it and storing it is requires, the question is, do we have enough manpower? Because this is going to require a lot of manpower. And last time I checked, we don't even have enough libraries, so.
It's not about libraries, it is a manpower thing, Hamid, but here's the biggest concern just for us to end off before, you know, after once again appropriating the lovely 10 minutes every time that David loves to give us.
Mm-hmm.
There is major need of connecting Namibia's public sector. And everyone can
information-wise.
Not just information-wise. Because remember,
we have websites that are barely functioning.
Yeah.
That's how far we are.
And you need people to generate the data. Reason being, if you look at the need in terms of extending the healthcare, the free healthcare that the Minister of Health tries to achieve.
Yeah, we're going to do that before somewhere around April next year.
Or maybe by 2035 as well. And then we also need to extend various other services. For example, each one of those health facilities needs an ambulance. Get to teaching. We need to build more schools because Namibians definitely are having more bunnies.
Left out one thing. AI ambulance. Go.
No. Don't worry. We first need to, someone first has to pass in the village their license to be appointed the ambulance driver.
Yeah.
Because I just walked past a private ambulance service now.
Yeah.
With the whole ambulance standing there. With all the ambulance, and paramedics, personnel.
Uh-huh.
You know, waiting for the next call. Which obviously indicates the next emergency, which obviously indicates someone's life. Is in danger. Now, I know, and some people obviously in the state, in the public sector know that the government are trying to sort of like internalize their spending in for itself.
Yeah.
But we can definitely develop triple P scenarios where they can borrow, for example, and empower a local company to try and have ambulance coverage, Helmut, in a region. Because you can't sit, for example, what was that one statistic that Omaheke had? One ambulance for the whole region. Now, if the one licensed guy in the public sector, in Omaheke, who is licensed to drive the ambulance, is sick. And believe you me, the traffic officers don't understand anything else if you don't have a license. They will tell you, bruh, stop it.
Imagine a traffic officer running into an ambulance. So where's the patient, officer? Sorry. Unfortunately, I am the patient. And you are driving, So.
And you're sitting there with a drip while driving.
Okay, now I have to go. Patient is not wasting time.
That police officer will tell you, bruh, are you sure you are
fit enough?
You are focusing on the road. I don't know.
But from this external,
you know,
C-type port, I'm good.
C-type port, you had to go for C-type.
Homeboy is charging.
Of course it's charging.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that need, Hamid, will just grow.
Unfortunately so. But
it will just grow.
Have a little faith. We are dealing with it.
I mean, the one time that I was on Ongwadiva back in 2016 or 2017, and on Ndangwa, they were building a, what was the thing's name? A fire station. 2015, 2016.
Okay, now. David Gomadas. Until tomorrow, same time, same place. So, before you decide to take up agriculture, narrow it down to which practice.
Plus also,
is there a market?
Try and help the data collection discussion.
Yeah.